kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun show lined up, and I am starting things off tagging in as co-host right now, Grant Henry. Welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm good. Howdy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been way too long since you've been here. I think it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah. you keep having cool stuff going on here, so I just keep showing up.
Hey, the more the merrier. You know I love it when you're on.
Hey. I love being on.
But you are not alone, because we have a guest to talk to. And I'm sorry, Grant, I know usually when I bring you on for these, we have Mel Kirk from Zen Studios coming on to chat. He's not here today.
What? 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 I was promised Kirk. No, I'm
instead.
I've seen enough of that guy. It's okay.
Instead, we have a replacement on hand, Christopher Baker of Zen Studios. How are you doing today, sir?
I am doing great. I am no Mel Kirk. He is a Captain Kirk when it comes to Zen. but I shall do my best to replace him and be his. His Spock. I guess I could be the Spock to his Kirk. Sure.
You know, we should say that, you know, Mel Kirk is no Chris Baker. You know, when it comes down to it.
Oh, next time Mel's on, just be like, Mel, you know what? You're fun to have on, but you're no Chris Baker.
We couldn't get Chris on, so hey, Mel. Hey, man.
No, I am honored to be on the show talking about Zen Studios, which is one of my favorite game companies. And I'm happy to be part of them right now.
Well, we are thrilled to have you on. And since we don't know too much about you, tell us about you, what you do at Zen, what your position is.
Yeah, I'm a PR consultant at Zen right now. So basically, I'm helping spread the word about their games and why they're so great. I've actually been kind of associated with Zen for quite a while because I used to work in Marvel's games division. And in 2010, I was their point person for Marvel Pinball, part of the Pinball FX2 at the time, up to Pinball FX3 now. And, you know, I've just had a really great relationship with those guys, even when I wasn't at Marvel. And, you know, whenever they put out a pinball table, I'm super happy to play it and tweet about it because it's one of my favorite things to do is play their pinball games. And, you know, there's just a lot of exciting stuff going on at Zen right now. We'll talk about Out of Ammo soon. But, yeah, also, in addition to Marvel, I worked at LucasArts. I did PR there.
Oh.
And before that, I was on the official U.S. PlayStation magazine for about 5 years. So I was an editor there. And that's pretty much where I got my start. I also worked at a website called allgame.com before that. And for a little bit, I worked at Gazillion, rest in peace, the makers of Marvel Heroes. that was a great game, I'm sad to see it go too, but, you know, it is what it is.
I know this is a Zen show, but is there any news on what happened with Marvel Heroes Omega, or is that still like NDA, can't talk about any of that stuff?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, maybe you could say there's nothing like super scandalous, but I'd rather not get into that.
Is there any hope of a revival of the game?
I mean, there's always hope for anything. I never thought they'd re-release the Ultimate Alliance games, and they did. So, but I doubt it would be a Gazillion product. I don't know.
Man, that was such a fun game too. I put so much time into it.
It was a great game. Did you play the console version or the PC version?
I played on Xbox One. We covered the Xbox One version of the game on the show. I gave it very high marks and a high recommendation. And then a few months later, the game ends, and now I just look like a dick.
Yeah, well,
it wasn't that long. It was so quick after the game came. It was just really, I just can't think of another circumstance where it happened quite like that.
Like six or seven months.
Infinite Crisis, the DC game, didn't last that long either. It was in like a public beta for I think longer than it was an official game. But I can't really speak any more to that, but I miss it as much as you guys do.
Man, moment of silence for Marvel Heroes Omega. So you worked on getting Marvel properties into Zen Pinball. What was your role in all of that?
So when I was at Marvel, I worked in their games division, and overall as a whole, I would be given projects that would become video games, such as Marvel Pinball, such as Spider-Man games from Activision, such as Marvel versus Capcom 3, Lego Marvel, a bunch of games like that. And it was basically my job to make sure everything going into those games was up to a Marvel standard and everyone was wearing the right costumes. They were saying things they would say. The stories were the kinds of stories you'd expect from a Marvel property. The environments looked like they should, that kind of stuff. So making sure that the content was what it should be. You know, I would do my best to inform the gameplay as well to make sure it was as good as it could be as well. I wasn't a programmer, though, so didn't always work out that well. I worked on a few games that aren't really highly regarded. But
like which ones?
Iron Man, X-Men, Destiny. You know, there's things I can point it to in all the games that weren't that great that I honestly think I did to make the games a little bit better. So it was like a 44 instead of a 42. But
hey, that two points is yours.
I don't know. I don't know. I definitely did everything I could to make sure that the games were as Marvelicious, so to speak, as they could be, and it was a fun job.
Nice. Go ahead, Grant.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I've always wondered about how that process works. You hear about things like the Star Wars properties, and you have to go through the sort of black box to get approval for things. And I always imagined it as being this giant sort of monolithic pyramid thing, like the thing from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's just sort of this computer, and you put in the information, and it goes not good enough or good enough or whatever. So were you that monolithic deity over at Marvel? Were you the one that was like this works, this doesn't work? Or is there just sort of like a D&D collection of written materials you have to reference to be like, does it score enough? I mean, was that kind of
what I was you had definitely to do? A large piece of said monolith. I would say most of the kind of more creative material that went into the games was my arena. You know, if it was my game, I didn't do every single Marvel game. I did, you know, I had my own and other people on staff had theirs. But so like, say, Marvel Pinball, for example. Actually, if you go back all the way to a 2010 PlayStation blog entry that I did about Captain America, it's a pretty good look behind the curtain. And, you know, it's talking about how there's, you know, there's a submission process. You generate an asset. That asset could be a piece of art, such as a character model or, you know, marketing key art or something like that. It could be a game concept. It could be a script, you know, just an asset or just sometimes asking permission to do something. And then, you know, that goes through a process and, you know, we make sure it's legally okay to do, and you just kind of use your own judgment as an authority on the subject matter on if it falls in line with the brand, and there's challenges to that too, because there's always schedules and sometimes you have to make concessions and stuff like that. But and every licensor does things differently, so what I'm talking about here might not be the same with Star Wars or, you know, sure. Universal, which is another cool property that Zen works with now. They just put out Back to the Future and E.T. and Jaws recently as pinball tables. It sounds like your question was more general, like what's the licensing process like? And the answer is it differs. Or approvals for licensing. It differs according to who the licensor is. But, it's all basically like, here's a piece of something we want to do with your property. Does it meet your standards? yes or no. And if it's no, they'll, you know, if they're a good licensor, they'll tell you why. That's, I always tried to do that. I even gave some ideas for pinball, kind of gameplay design kind of things that went into games, which I am pretty happy about.
What are the marks that you've left on tables?
Oh, yeah. I think my favorite is the Infinity Gauntlet. I don't remember how many of the kind of gems uses I suggested. So if you put a ball into play that is an Infinity Gem, you know, there's six different Infinity Gems have different powers. I mean, if there are Infinity Stones now, if you go by the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but back then they were gems. And, you know, the one that everyone seems to react to is the Reality Gem, which if you put the red Reality Gem into play, which literally you do on the Infinity Gauntlet table, the Infinity Gem becomes a pinball that goes batting around, but it flips the table upside down. So it alters your reality in that sense. It flips the table completely upside down. It's still completely playable pinball, but you know, you're looking at the flippers at the top of the screen. So
that's cool.
Yeah, that's like one of the most kind of tangible examples. I also, another one that the people seem to really like was the Avengers table, where there were actually six different balls that you could choose from at the very beginning, and each one represented a different Avenger, and they each had like a different boost. So I don't remember what the boosts specifically are, but I think maybe like the Hulk gave you like two times the power to start for a certain amount of time or something like that. So, you know, and that affects your strategy. Like, do you want to start out with Black Widow's boost, or do you want to start out with Hawkeye's boost? You know, it was a kind of interesting way to, you know, vary up the kind of pinball formula.
That was one of my favorite parts of that table as well.
Cool.
So that's really cool. I hate asking another non-Zen related question, but I did want to get your opinion since you were at Marvel. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the whole new Spider-Man game only being on PS4? Because I know a lot of people, a lot of Nintendo fans, a lot of Xbox fans are pissed that there's a new Spider-Man game who is, you know, a global icon who has had games on basically every platform ever made. Now a new Spider-Man is coming out. It looks incredible. And it's a console exclusive.
Yep. Okay, so here's the thing with that. You know, a lot of people really want it on every console, right? And I agree, I'd love to see that too. But the reality is that the reason it's getting so much resources behind it to make it the huge AAA game it's going to be is because it's a console exclusive. You know, Sony is the one who's funding most of this game, and you know, they're putting a lot of money behind it because they want people to buy PS4s. So it's, you know, that's just a kind of business reality. And, you know, it sucks for people who only have an Xbox or only a Switch, but that's just kind of the way it is and way it has been, you know, since 8-bit days.
Do you think that has a chance of negatively impacting the sales? I know no. With Street Fighter V being a console exclusive, like, people shun that game for quite a while. It was, what, a year and a half until people started to finally give it a fresh chance?
I don't think it's going to really affect it. In fact, I think just the attention it has and the hype behind it right now, I think it's going to be the it'll be the best-selling Spider-Man game ever. I would be shocked if it's not. I mean, Spider-Man 2, maybe. I actually don't know for sure that Spider-Man 2, I'm assuming that Spider-Man 2 is the best-selling Spider-Man game, but I think this would certainly challenge that if it doesn't surpass it, because I think it's going to be a system seller game. It looks amazing. A very good friend of mine is a creative director on it, which is pretty cool. And yeah, I can't wait for that game.
Is there any truth to the rumors that it's a PlayStation exclusive in exchange for Sony playing nice with Marvel and letting Spider-Man be part of the MCU?
I don't know. I haven't been.
That's the other bit of speculation. Like, Sony let Spider-Man go play with the rest of the Marvel kids, and Marvel's like, yeah, you can make your Spider-Man game, whatever. Just give us our movies.
in my experience, those are pretty separate, but, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you for sure. And even if I did know, I probably could not tell you.
I just figured this is the closest I would ever get to any kind of answers on this stuff.
Yeah.
So I had to ask.
I haven't been in Marvel in 3.5 years, so I'm sure a lot of things have changed. But yeah, I mean, the games and movies divisions were very different at that point. So yeah, I couldn't tell you for sure.
So what have you been doing the past 3 years then?
Well, a part of that was at Gazillion. Part of it's just kind of contracting. I've been doing some freelance. I actually did some over the summer. I did some journalism freelance again. I worked for I did some stuff on RollingStone.com. Nice. Did some stuff for Marvel.com. yeah.
How'd you land that gig?
Yeah, I know some people. I wrote a book called Wrong Retro Games, You Messed Up Our Comic Book Heroes, which is kind of about what I did at Marvel. I went through all the superhero games from 1978 through 1992, and I like just picked out like one thing where if I'm coming into this game and I'm learning about this character, this universe or whatever from this game, it basically points out things that are just way off base, which especially back then was incredibly frequent. Like, you know, Batman is purple in the NES game. You don't know anything about Batman. When you play the NES game, he's purple. Yeah, I also started a YouTube channel about superhero video games. Actually, one of my videos about Spider-Man PS4 went pretty viral. Well, you know, it's viral as I can expect it to be last summer. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, it's been a fun, interesting ride. It kind of all comes back to doing things at least tangentially related to superhero games. I guess that's kind of become my niche.
You just can't escape them.
Yeah, well, you know, I also kind of don't want to, especially now that they're. I think, you know, it used to be like a conception that any licensed game is probably going to suck. I think that's different now. I think most of the time, licensed games are actually good. You know, they might have like crappy things going on, like Battlefront 2 did, but it was, you know, it's a good game. Yeah. You know, like Spider-Man's probably going to be a good game. Those Middle Earth games are really good. Like Batman games are really good. Like it's harder to find a bad AAA like licensed game these days than it certainly used to be, because it used to be the norm that they were, you know, average, and now they're pretty good.
It helps that high fantasy and superhero movies are in and make money, because, you know, it's no one wants to make a video game for There Will Be Blood. You know what I mean? I mean, you could, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think a big thing, too, is that the trends over the past decade is away from the movie game, because, you know, early 2000s and the 90s, late 2000s even, there was games for movies pretty much day and date with every action movie. And you don't really see that anymore. They're all Lego games if you do, and those are all good.
Yeah.
You know, so
and you got strange cases like The Mummy, where The Mummy Demastered is objectively a better game than the movie was. So that's odd. I'd be into more of that. That's fine. I don't think that the default for a film is to go pixel art side scroller with a synthwave soundtrack either. That almost feels like a happy accident, but.
Right.
You know,
and I think that helped that way forward was the one developing that. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was positive.
And Zen does a great job with the, you know, the pinball games that are like movie based. You know, they had a Force Awakens table shortly after that came out. There have been, you know, tables based on the Avengers and Age of Ultron and stuff like that. So, and you know, the classic stuff like Back to the Future and E.T. and Jaws. Those are great ways. I love, you know, just I've told people in the past, like the games I worked on at Marvel, I worked on some pretty good games, you know, like Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 and the Marvel vs. Capcom 3. You know, a lot of games that have, you know, a lot of kind of replayability and stuff. And the game I always came back to the most after it came out was Marvel Pinball. You know, I think that just says a lot to how replayable these things are. And it if you get like friends involved, playing it too, there's a lot of like leaderboard competition going on. Like, especially when the first Marvel Pinball came out, I had like 6 or 8 friends interested in playing it, and we were constantly going after each other with that in a way I hadn't seen since I guess Pac-Man Championship Edition and Geometry Wars. Like, those were kind of the big ones before that. But yeah, so I forget what the question was now. I've kind of veered away from it.
That's the beauty of this show. I don't remember the question. I think I asked you about Spider-Man on PS4 a while ago.
Oh, okay.
And we were talking about licenses and or like,
yeah, right.
movie games.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah, they routinely nail it, Zen, with the pinball. Like, there's obviously more going on with Zen. Like, you guys are they're expanding into other types of games, but they always have the pinball thing going on.
I think I've done just kind of a lot of analysis in my head, you know, playing these games, working on them, and I think it's like abstract art, you know, because you're not literally, you know, being Captain America in the Avengers table or whatever. But when you are the Captain America pinball, you kind of are Captain America, and you're getting all of these fond memories of that movie that you like. But it's a unique gaming experience unto itself also. For me, I think that's what makes it work really well, is that, you know, it's totally evoking this thing that you love, but it just kicks ass as a game too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Zen is just too good at everything they do. That's the problem. You're just too good.
So it's one of my favorite video game companies, and yeah, I would say if I had to name like my favorite company I ever worked with at Marvel, it would be Zen. I really enjoyed working with Activision and Capcom and Warner Brothers, but yeah, I mean, just the way Zen has always really kind of welcomed my feedback and made me feel like I'm part of them, and now I guess that's true more than ever. I've really appreciated that.
Nice. We probably should talk a bit about a future release coming from Zen is called Out of Ammo on PlayStation VR. We should probably cover that a little bit, huh?
Let's do that. So yeah, that comes out.
What is this game?
So Out of Ammo is like, it's a PSVR game, as you said, and it's a very unique kind of hybrid between like real-time strategy and first-person shooter, or you know, kind of tower defense real-time strategy. And so basically you've got this battlefield, imagine like an overview of a battlefield. You can, you know, pick up your sniper tower, you can pick up you know, a place for a machine gun and stuff like that, put them wherever you want as right before the waves of enemies come in. And then once you do all that, you can actually possess possess an enemy type. Like, there's the sniper, there's the rifleman who has the machine gun, there's an engineer who has a shotgun, there's a couple other classes too, and you can actually control things from the battlefield in first person mode, and then you can go back out and, you know, do your real-time strategy stuff as things get blown apart and as you get new shipments in to put new fixtures onto your map, so that you can real-time strategize. And it's just a really cool kind of mix between these two genres that I've never really seen before.
Guys, I'm very eager to check it out myself. I have not been able to put any kind of substantial time into it myself, mainly because as of right now I only have one PlayStation Move controller and it needs to.
Yes.
So I messed around a little bit at the beginning as best I could with the one Move controller. I was successfully able to get the basketball in the hoop, by the way.
Yeah. Wow. That actually is an accomplishment. That's more than I thought you would be able to do with one controller. So
I was legitimately sad I didn't get a trophy for that.
How is it as a basketball game, would you say?
Yeah, oh, I dunked it.
It's like a trophy thing, doesn't it?
I dunked it. I didn't try throwing it. I just dunked it. Walked up,
yeah.
Lifted over, dropped it in.
Cool. You just taught me something. I didn't know that. I saw the basketball hoop. I didn't realize you could actually interact with it. So that's cool. One thing that I think is actually really cool about not just this game, but like kind of what it represents is this is like the first in a whole line of games that Zen is going to do that were originally like PC exclusive games. that were put together by like smaller teams without like huge budgets or anything. So, you know, we're basically working with a bunch of smaller teams that put out really great games like on Steam or whatnot, and porting them to console. So it's not just VR, it'll be other things too. But this is the first one of those. And I think it's just a really great, it really represents like how cool Zen is as a, like, as a developer, because they're, you know, they're still an indie themselves, but, you know, they've had all this success with pinball over the last decade. And, you know, they're in a position now where they can help the smaller guys out so that maybe, you know, they're as big as Zen is now, or even bigger eventually. So it's just a really cool, like, helping out the little guy kind of program we have going on right now. I'm really happy to be part of it.
How many developers are you guys working with right now?
I don't know if I can say. I don't even know if I personally even know, but there's definitely, there's a lot, you know, Mel, who I think we talked about earlier, he is definitely working with a lot of companies. There's a lot of people coming at our door, and I think it's, we have a full slate. I'll say that. And I know there's another one that should be announced relatively soon. I don't know exactly when yet, but just stay tuned for that too.
I saw on the trailer for Out of Ammo when you first put it up a little while ago that I think you're offering a free copy of Castle Storm.
That's true.
Pre-orders.
Yeah.
That's an interesting step. I can't remember the last time I've seen that, a free game with pre-order, and Castle Storm was a somewhat lauded game.
Yeah.
I guess is it the VR version of Castle Storm?
It is the VR version. Yeah. So okay, yeah, if you order before, it comes out on the 30th. So order before the 30th, you will get a free copy of Castle Storm VR as well. So it's which I don't know the price of that off the top of my head, but I think it's pretty comparable to what Out of Ammo costs, so it's almost 2-for-1 kind of thing.
And that is a Zen game, right? That's not a yeah. that's not just a
published Castle game. Storm, yeah, Castle Storm is on everything. If you don't play it on PSVR, you can play it on your phone, you can play it on a Xbox 360 and One, I believe. You know, it if you have something that plays video games since like 2011 or whenever it came out, it almost certainly has Castle Storm and Castle Storm Pinball. There's a Castle Storm Pinball table too.
It's a great table.
Yeah.
I've been trying to look up how much Castle Storm VR is. It is $14.99, so that is a $14.99 value you get for free just by pre-ordering Out of Ammo.
I think there's something to say for that too, with the number of VR titles that can be a little more expensive. I think people are kind of hungry for more VR at a cheaper price, because they're just, you know, a lot of the times I think people just want a taste of the experience to see what it's like. So
totally,
two games for that price, two VR games is a pretty good, that would do you for a while, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Castle Storm, they're both really replayable games. Like they're, you know, Out of Ammo is, you know, has leaderboards, and it's very much kind of, I don't know if horde mode's the right way to put it, but it's kind of got a whole, like, you've got wave after wave of enemies and you want to survive as long as you can in the, like, the main mode that there is. So, yeah, there's tons of replayability, and it's a great value. It really is.
Is it sort of, are there levels in the game, or is it sort of a start from scratch, sort of horde mode style setup?
There's several different modes. To be honest, I've only really played the main mode, which is survival, and it is kind of a horde mode where, you kind of just last as long as you can. You know, you're calling in airstrikes, you have like these kind of special powers you can do every so often too. There's also Overwatch is another, it's not the game Overwatch, but
I was gonna say that's a really Overwatch. Cool.
Oh yeah. We threw
cross promotion
Blizzard game
free
too.
Copy.
Yeah. No, that is
Overwatch VR.
You're a sniper, and there's like this helicopter that's been downed, and you're, that's basically like a sniping mode. And then there's a couple other modes called Icarus and Vertigo. In Icarus, you're like, you've crash landed and there's like all these bad guys around you, and you've got to scavenge for all the ammo that you can get. Vertigo, you're on the top of a skyscraper, and you can hold off attackers with your shotgun while also finding time to hack a computer, until the chopper comes around to the rescue. So, you know, it's different modes that will keep you playing for a while.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. I am very excited to finally get into the game. During this interview, actually, my phone went off the fucking other controllers. Wow. Great timing, UPS, you sons of bitches.
Take a break real quick. We'll have a full review in 10 minutes. Get that thing plugged. We should just live stream your gameplay session, but only over audio.
Oh my god. I wonder if the headset would reach over here. Like, now I'm actually kind of tempted to try doing
that. Yeah, you know, I'm kind of personally kind of new to the whole PSVR thing. I got it for Christmas, and I've just been, that's mainly what I've played in terms of video games ever since. And this one, more so than any game I've played, is where, you know, I'll take the set off my head when I'm done, and I'm like, wow, I did not think I was facing this direction.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. I like last night, I thought I was facing the TV, and I was actually literally facing the complete opposite direction when I took the headset off.
Yeah, I've had that. You just put the headset on, you're moving around a little bit, and you're like, take a step to the left. Okay, well, I should be fine over there. And then you're like walking into the kitchen table somehow. Like, how's the cord on here this long?
Right, yeah. It's not a lot of moving in different direction, or you know, steps, I guess. It's you'll pretty much be in the same spot. You'll just be kind of turned around in different ways.
So you said you got a VR for Christmas. What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I love it. First of all, I had this kind of realization probably a week or so after playing it, but I haven't really felt this way about video games since I got my NES for Christmas 1987. And what I mean by that is, like, the day after I got my NES, we went to Toys R Us, and there's this whole aisle of games, some of which I've heard of, most of which I haven't. And, you know, I'm very well informed in the video game industry, and, you know, I have been basically ever since that day at Toys R Us. But there's a huge hole in my knowledge of actual PSVR games. So I went into the PlayStation store, and I realized I don't know what most of these are. I've heard of a few of them, you know, Resident Evil 7, all the big ones and all that. But I'm just going to, there's a huge sale going on right now. If it's like $2 to $5, why not? So yeah, I still haven't played them. I must have like 30 to 40 games now. You know, and I'm going through them, and I'm enjoying almost all of them. You know, a lot of times it probably is novelty that won't be as fun in a year, but, you know, that's fine. You know, I really like the Voltron game. I didn't. I was like, wow, this is.
They have a Voltron game. Holy shit!
Voltron PSVR game. Yeah, it's kind of like you're on the bridge of the enemy ship for a while, and then you're controlling one of the lions. I haven't gotten to the part where you actually form Voltron yet. Maybe I should do that this weekend. We'll see. But yeah, so not only am I finding all these games I've discovered, I'm also like finding that I'm playing games I really enjoy, and then I'm like, what was that game called? I don't know. Like, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, yeah, I really like that baseball game, and, you know, you don't know that it's LJN's MLB or whatever. It's just, it's that baseball game. So, you know, there's a lot of games that I like that I could describe to you, but I don't know what they're called.
I haven't played the show in a few years. Do they have any kind of VR mode in there for even like a home run derby or something?
Wow. You know, I haven't even looked. I have the last one, and I haven't even thought to look at that. I should try that.
Because if last year's doesn't, or if this year's doesn't, that is such a missed, wasted opportunity.
Yeah, you got to think. Well, I know their big thing last year was the, like, retro Ken Griffey mode. So I don't remember them really hyping up a VR mode, but maybe they do. I still haven't done like the Tomb Raider or the Call of Duty, the Infinite Warfare. I haven't done that one yet. I really loved the Star Wars Battlefront 1 VR that they had. That was like it takes place inside Rogue One. I don't know if you guys have played it, but it's like it actually takes place during the course of that movie in a way that makes sense, which I thought was really cool.
Is someone knocking on the table or on a desk or something?
I hear that too. It's like a rumble noise.
Like a...
Wow, yeah, I hear it too.
It's a mystery. Sounds like a war zone outside, guys. You guys safe? You guys okay?
I feel like it's just been happening for like the past 10 minutes. I keep hearing it, and now it just stopped.
Is it there now?
No.
No.
Okay, I don't know.
Damn it, Mel.
Yeah, Mel's in your sabotage.
Mel's haunting the show.
We need Mel's more damn it Mel's. More damn it Mel's in this episode.
He's haunting the show.
If I ever get to pick up a PSVR or borrow one or whatever, there's a load of games I already own that support it. Like there's Thumper, and there is some sort of experience with Last Guardian, I think. I don't think you can just play the game with it, but...
there's a downloadable demo, which I still need to check out, yeah.
Yeah, so I one day, haven't got there yet. Should have jumped on the Christmas sale, but I did not, so...
Come visit, Grant. Come visit.
Yeah,
you can hang out with the cats. We'll grab a pizza and you can play some VR.
Walk into your kitchen table.
Yes.
Yep.
That'd be awesome.
There's a little bit of that going on. Yeah.
So how has the Pinball Effects VR stuff done for Zen? Because that's been out for a while at this point.
Yeah. You know, I personally haven't dealt with that. I haven't been with Zen for very long in this capacity, and they haven't released anything new since then. So I'm not really sure. I mean, I get the impression it's doing well. To be honest, I haven't played it yet, but I've seen the pictures, and it looks like a cool approach.
Is that on PSVR, or is that just a computer, is that just for PC?
Okay, so I do know that Pinball FX2 is on PSVR, and the selection of games isn't as big as Pinball FX2 standard, but it's still pretty good, and you know, it's got like Walking Dead and most of the Zen originals. I don't know off the top of my head what everything is that's on there, but it's definitely enough to keep you occupied. From what I know of VR and what I know of Zen Pinball FX, I can only imagine that it might be the only thing I ever play once I ever do so.
I need to go back to Pinball VR and see if I'm missing any tables. 'Cause I know when it first came out, you guys at Zen were nice enough to send over a copy of the game and I think one or two table packs, and I'm not sure what else I have to pick up and grab. But now that I have a VR headset again, I miss doing it. I want to get back in that pinball room.
Yeah.
Play the Walking Dead pinball with the zombie outside the window. Like, let me in, please. It's cold out here.
Yeah, I want to do that too.
How's the Switch version of pinball doing?
You know, it was really well received. It's somewhere in the 80s on Metacritic, I know. So it's doing well and critically. I don't know what the sales are. I hope they're pretty good. But people really love the fact that you can take the Switch screen and turn it sideways, and you can play like that, like a pinball table should be. Mm-hmm. And we actually. It's funny, we had a slight delay in what we initially... microphone slipped. We had a slight delay in the actual release of the Switch version because someone at Nintendo was like, hey, you know, you've got these two Joy-Cons attached to the screen, but if you take the top one off and make it just a one Joy-Con experience, it actually balances out really well. So... they were like, wow, yeah, you're right. And so when you do that, you get like a nice balanced way to hold it sideways. And, you know, you also get the HD rumble, which is really cool. So it's Mel tells me it's his favorite way to play Zen Pinball. So I definitely trust him there.
So just leave one Joy-Con attached to the system and play vertical.
Yes.
Interesting. I'm waiting for someone to put out some kind of control grip for the Joy-Cons and for the Switch that has a swivel so that the screen can go from horizontal to vertical.
Okay.
Without having to detach controllers and without having to move things around. It's just always attached, but it has a swivel, so when the need arises, you just turn the screen vertical. I think it would work perfect for pinball. I know a lot of the arcade and like the ACA arcade archives games support vertical orientation. I'm surprised that there is no vertical control grip out yet.
Yeah, sounds like you should be in R&D for Nyko or Hori or one of those companies. Yeah, Best Buy's its insignia brand.
Oh god,
that is a 3D printable item you're talking about. So check. The Etsy game is strong with the 3D printable, 3D printed Switch parts. It's kind of crazy. So maybe you'll have to get on that. Because you don't actually have to have the Joy-Cons connected for it to work. So you don't have to worry about those side connectors, just some sort of weird shell. You just plop the Switch in and then put the controllers on the side. And
yeah.
You're gold. Someone get in Blender. Make this happen.
Let's do it.
Take this out of the podcast. We've got a business to run.
No.
Maybe we should just quit the podcast right now and go start that business.
All right. Good night, everyone. That would be such a shitty ending. So what is next with Zen? You guys have Out of Ammo releasing next week. What else is on the horizon?
There are some really cool things on the horizon that I can't tell you about yet, but you know,
any that have already been announced that you can tell us about?
Well, there's out of, you know, Mel's gonna kill me if there is, but I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. Let me go down my quick list here of stuff I have that I'm working on with Zen.
So you were brought in somewhat recently, correct?
Yeah. So go ahead.
I imagine you're part of this. There is sort of a push, and Mel had mentioned this before, because you are going to be publishing games that are not Zen, and there's sort of this awareness about Zen that revolves around the pinball. And so I assume you're sort of part of that initiative, you know, for really pushing on some of these new titles, perhaps?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, just looking at the list I have here, nothing really strikes me as things that are coming out that have been announced. But, you know, there's definitely really cool pinball on the way. There's that other title that's part of this initiative that I alluded to earlier. There's stuff Zen is working on that they... you know, that they're just working on that isn't pinball. So there's a lot in the pipeline for a relatively small company in Hungary.
Damn. Grant, did you send in a job application yet? We joke about that every time you're on.
Yeah, I send an email to Mel every single day. It just says the same thing. But I change. It says, it's been 3 days since I wrote you last. It's been 4 days since I wrote no.
Cool. The thing is, they're not emails they're sending. You just saved bar coasters from when you guys met up for drinks, and you mail him one of those every day.
Yes. Yes. I'm a falconer, and I send Mordecai up there on the weekly to deliver a new coaster.
What a great name for a falcon.
Yeah. Yeah, you're damn right it is. No, he... It's great. Mel's, you know, lives near me, and his wife has family right near me, and they were down for the holiday. So we got to have a beer and talk Zen for a little bit. So that was a lot of fun.
And you texted me a picture.
I did. I did send Joe a picture to brag.
I saw a text message from Grant Henry on my phone. I'm like, what the fuck is he? Oh, hey, you met up with Mel.
I didn't know he had this long history with you guys, so that's kind of cool.
Is it technically long?
He's been on several times, right?
I think this was supposed to be his fourth appearance.
Yeah, there was one where he and this was the first, Chris, but Joe got Mike from Farsight Studios and Mel on from Zen on the same show, so it was like the video pinball posse. Oh, it was nice. The Ball Squad.
Ball Squad.
I wrote a theme song for it. It's in the episode. You'll have to go listen to it.
I'll play it on this one, too.
Okay.
There you go. Sweet.
But yeah, that's kind of a first, and you know, it's not, and they knew that we each other would be there. We weren't just,
it wasn't like, an ambush thing. It was like, no, it wasn't surprise, fuckers.
Okay. Now fight. It was a great episode. It was a good episode.
Yeah, aside from that, I think Mel's been on two other times, and Grant, I'm sure you've been on for both of those as well.
Yeah, I can't remember. One was obviously just straight Pinball FX stuff. I can't remember the other one.
I thought you were on it. One was for Infinite Mini Golf.
If that's what it was. It was an Infinite Mini Golf.
I think that was the very first one, was Infinite Mini Golf. And then it was Ball Squad. And then it was just more pinball stuff, and Mike couldn't make it, so it was like Ball Squad-ish.
Yes.
And now this was his number four, and he bailed on us, Grant.
Chris
to him?
Chris is like he's like on the bench. He's like the alternate for the Ball Squad member.
Yeah, you know, I'll take that. Sure. Yeah, you take it. alternate on the Ball Squad.
You're
that's going on my resume right now.
Marvel.
All about the Ball Squad.
No, you mentioned this was a super fun company to work for. I just get the sense, you know, after we've talked with Mel, and just the kind of aesthetic you guys go for, the way that you present yourselves, just it feels like a really exudes positivity in just about everything that Zen does.
It's a real team that really believes in everything that they do. You know, they don't have to go to smaller studios and say, hey, we like your game, can we help you have a lot larger audience for it? They do it because they love games and they're just nice people, you know, and they see a good business opportunity there too. But, it's just a great bunch that I'm really happy to be part of. And they all have really cool names coming out of Hungary too. Like Zsolt is an awesome name, and Zoltan. And it's like, I love just working with those guys, and it's really cool.
Those are some great names. Then you have Chris.
They really are. Chris, you know. Well, maybe we're exotic to them. I don't know.
Probably. Have you had the chance to go out?
Super English. Their English is better than a lot of people I know. It's extraordinary.
That's great.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to ask if you have time to spend time out in Hungary. I know Mel has
I'd love to someday, but no, I haven't. I'd love to.
Yeah. You're sort of required to be there a certain amount of time out of the year, obviously.
Yeah, Mel goes there a lot.
Makes sense with all the activity. You guys have been busy.
Yeah, totally.
You get left at home to water the plants while the grown-ups go to Hungary.
Yeah.
So you said you're based in New York?
Yes.
Does Zen have a studio there, or are you just working with them from home?
I'm working with them from home. You know, if you want to call it a Zen office, then go ahead. Multiple offices around.
Working in your underwear. That's the way to do it, man.
I usually wear pants at least, but, you know.
Why?
That is so an now excellent we, point.
Now we know that Joe podcasts in his underwear.
I am wearing shorts, thank you.
Same thing.
Just in case, like, I end up streaming it and the camera goes on, like, you know, I can't have... Can't go balls out for real on the show. Only metaphorically.
Have you ever tried it? Can you actually say that definitively?
That I've been naked on my show? No, I have never been naked on my show.
Maybe you should try it sometime.
I mean, if you guys insist, what the fuck do you want me to do?
Well, do you guys have a Patreon? It could be like a goal.
This is happening. You guys wanted this. Fuck this. That
wanted it. I just said maybe you should try it sometime.
That sounded like a want to me. Get this off. Now the headset cord is like stuck in my sleeve.
Wow, I'm impressed. Do you have a nice leather seat? Are you all like stuck to it?
No, it's not. It's not leather. It's just like padded. It's actually like a Goodwill chair, so I might have scabies now.
There you go.
The acoustics are way much better on your mic now for some reason. How is that possible?
I wonder if it's because the sound is no longer bouncing off the shirt I was wearing, but instead my glistening, ripply, hairy chest.
This is everything Chris signed up for.
This is really great radio. Theater of the mind.
Mel wasn't sick. He just knew what he was getting into.
Mel's gonna listen to the show like what the fuck happens when I'm not on there.
I think there was one that we had him on, and he was Oh, who is the owner of the company? I can't remember his name. Chris, of Zen.
Oh, that's
anyway, Joel. Yeah. Okay, well, he walked in when Mel was talking to us about, he was sort of describing some of the more adult-oriented Infinite Mini Golf levels that had come in pre-release. It was pretty hilarious, and then he just sort of, Zol just sort of added a few things to the conversation, but I was like, oh my gosh, that's probably, maybe it has not happened on other podcasts. That's okay.
But that has solidified our love for Zen.
Cool.
Of course.
It's an easy thing to do, loving Zen. I mean, it's a great company name to love, too. It's like, you know, Zen is Zen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what's your, I'm just curious, because I am kind of looking into one of these, but what is, so far this year, of all the zillion PSVR games you have played, what's been your favorite? Like, what's the one or two things that you would point to and say, you must try these?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you the one that surprised me the most, that I found myself, I've probably played it the most so far. It's a game called Sneaky Bears. Have you guys heard of this one? I know.
We covered it, but I don't think I'm the one who reviewed it.
Well, what do you think the game is just by the name Sneaky Bears? I'm curious, because I had no idea what it would actually
be. I would think, like, God, I'm trying to remember. Like, I can't even remember the review if Greg's the one who covered it. Like, off the name, I would think, like, a hide-and-seek kind of game, maybe. But part of me wants to just be like, it's a shooter.
Right. Okay. It is. It's like a shooting gallery, basically. But, it's got a cuteness to it, but, you know, it's not like a total kid game. it's like the sneaky bears are like these teddy bears in a factory in different settings that come at you, and you have to fight them off by dual wielding. In your right hand you've got like a standard dart gun. It's a dart gun, and it actually has really good dart gun physics, which is pretty cool. And in your left hand, it depends on the mode you're playing, but there's like a freeze ray gun or a shotgun or a fire, like a flamethrower. And it does like a really good job of kind of like keeping you on your toes, and you've got to look all around, because they're sneaky bears and they'll sneak up on you and they'll hit you. It's got a fun kind of tongue in cheek, sense of humor to it. It's not super long or anything, but I got it on sale for $12. I think it was totally worth that.
Nice.
It's like my favorite kind of Hogan's Alley-esque shooting gallery game I've ever played out of that. So, let's see, what else do I really like? It's funny. I play a lot of things for like one night, and then it's like a new thing. I really like Spark. I wish it had like a good single player mode, because it's pretty much just a tutorial and then pure multiplayer. But Spark is basically Tron discs, like the discs of Tron kind of game. You guys know what I'm talking about? Where like,
absolutely
discs at each other. That's basically what it is, and they could literally just take the ball that you use most of the time and make it a Tron disc, and you know, have a cool licensed Tron game. I think it the shield, there's like a shield mechanic that, like, I feel like I'm Captain America, you know. the feedback on the controller is perfect. The way you angle the controller when a ball is thrown at you and you can use your shield to deflect it, that is just super impressive to me. Like, just the slightest move of your hand, and you know, it sends the ball in ways that you expect it to go at a physics level. I was super impressed with that game. But yeah, I do wish it were like it had a single player mode, but what are you gonna do? I still have to play. I need to play Resident Evil 7, even though I'm kind of scared to. But everyone's telling me, you know, that's the one you got to play. Batman, I really enjoyed. I'm a huge fan of Batman and superhero games, and that I don't understand if, like, where that takes place in the Arkham timeline, or if it's even considered Arkham canon, because there's some really dark stuff that happens in that game. I'm not entirely sure I understand the ending, but it's really cool being Batman. I mentioned earlier the Battlefront stuff I thought was really impressive. Really enjoyed Voltron.
I got to find that Voltron game that you're talking
about. Yeah, I think it was on sale for maybe $6 when I bought it. It's probably like 12 to 15, I imagine, at full retail.
Is it Voltron VR Chronicles? Is that what you're talking about?
I think so.
It's on Steam. I'm just looking at it. I love the cell shading in 3D and VR.
Yeah, it looks really neat. I've watched a little bit of the Netflix show. It's based on that. But yeah, like there's a lot of, like, I guess you'd call them cutscenes. That, you know, it's not your traditional cutscene, but you're basically hanging out with the Voltron crew or the bad guys in Voltron. I forget their names. You know, I've also just really enjoyed YouTube and Hulu in 3D. Well, not 3D, in VR mode. Like I went to YouTube and I turned on the VR mode. And one of the first things that came up when I just did a general search was this, like, a bunny video where it's like a 3D camera in the midst of, I don't know, like 20 bunnies. And,
oh my.
And you feel like you're, I don't know, Ant-Man or something, like looking up at all of these bunnies that are coming around. They probably put like food on the camera or something, and they're like sniffing at you, and it's like,
there's these monsters, get them away
I'm
from me.
My cuteness.
Jesus Christ, they're going to eat me.
Yeah, you know, it was, I just really enjoyed doing that. You know, like there's a,
That's like Night of the Lepus. You guys familiar with Night of the Lepus?
No.
I'm going to put this in the chat. 1972 movie with giant rabbits. It's terrible. it's the most, one of the most hilarious bad movies I've ever seen. You guys should probably go find that, stream that somewhere.
Okay.
Well, it looks like I have homework for tonight.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be a good movie in VR. There was like a fan film for Star Wars that was pretty cool where they adapted a Star Wars comic I've actually read. Which was just kind of a neat thing to see. The acting was terrible, but you know, it had it had a cool, you know, very Star Warsy setup all the way around me, and you know, there's just a lot of potential with VR that, you know, I think I knew that going in, but I didn't realize how much I wanted VR until I started actually participating in it. And
I have a Pixel and a little Daydream headset, and the field of view is not that great. And the horsepower isn't that much, but it works. And just some of the experiences on there, the 3D YouTube videos work great. There's Google has made commissioned a few games. One's called virtual reality, where you're essentially working for this corporation and you keep putting on VR goggles over and over again to travel to different, like, different places and scenarios. It's very odd, but it works great. And that's just for mobile. So I'm really curious to see where things go. Cool. It's neat. I'm a fan so far.
Yeah, there's other apps on PSVR that have video content. Like there's one that has a lot of NBA stuff, and you can like see, they put a camera like right next to the basket, so you can see like people going up for dunks, and it's really cool. It's really impressive. You know, there's like courtside seats, like literal courtside seats, where you're turning your head as the as they go from side to side playing basketball. It's pretty cool.
I'm like trying to look through my PSVR games to see what kind of good ones I have. I know I really enjoyed Bandit 6 Combined Arms, like basically two games in one. One is like a ground beach defense game where you're in a handful of different guns, like gunner turrets, and you could swap between them, and AI covers the rest, and you just have to defeat waves of military ships and choppers coming after you. The other half of the game is like you're a tail gunner in an airplane, and it's basically like dogfighting.
Hmm.
And that one, I thought that one was really cool.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. Yeah. Any kind of like gun. One of the cool things about out of ammo I like is you run out of ammo all the time. Go figure. And you can you actually have to take the magazine, refill your magazine in your machine gun, or you know, refill the bullet in your sniper rifle or whatever. And you physically do that by like cocking back or pulling something out, putting something back in. It's just, it certainly heightens the immersion more than just like hitting a button to reload in a typical FPS.
Yeah, press X to reload.
Right.
All done.
Very cool.
I thought Headmaster was really, really neat too. I think that was a launch title. It's basic. It doesn't even require any controllers, just the headset. And soccer balls will get shot at you, and it's your job to head them into the soccer net.
Okay.
It sounds easy enough when it starts, but then they'll throw in like obstacles and special point targets that you got to hit. And it's, I think that's easily one of the earlier, better titles in PSVR. Pretty sure there's a demo for it too, so definitely check that one out.
Cool. Yeah, I've got still tons of demos I haven't even tried yet. I've got full games I haven't tried yet. I've got that Until Dawn game that I'd like to try out at some point. It was
Rush of Blood.
PSN. Yeah.
Yes, you got to give that one a try. Every time I have family come over, I'm like, "Oh, have you ever played virtual reality?"
Yeah, I don't really know anything about it. I loved Until Dawn, just the game.
It's nothing like the game.
Yeah, I didn't figure it would be. It seems like it's a jump scare kind of game.
It's an on-rail shooter.
Okay.
Where you're on a roller coaster.
Okay.
It's creepy. There's plenty of scares there. Some good gunplay. It's a really fun game, and it's been my go-to to make people put the headset on and like, "Here, play this game." They're like, "Yeah, oh, well, oh, this is neat. This is a little broken. Ooh, oh, this is moving fast. Uh-oh. Oh, boy. Ooh. Hey, what's that? Oh, my God, what is that?"
Yeah, there's moments, you know, the Sneaky Bears game is not a scary game, but if you, like, turn your head at just the right moment and that bear is, like, right there at you and you didn't know it was coming, it's pretty scary.
I saw a picture of a bear with a football helmet, and
yeah,
I really want to play that game.
It's pretty awesome. I really liked it.
I'm looking through my list, I really don't think I have Sneaky Bears, and now I'm sad.
Well, there you go. And meanwhile, I've gone and looked at this image of the bunnies he sent, and that's quite horrifying.
I believe it's a classic, bona fide.
Imagine probably being on that tape. There's like this long table, and there's six or eight bunnies there. Imagine being on that table, looking up. That's kind of what that VR experience is like.
Yeah.
And it's just a YouTube video.
Oh, great. I got to try YouTube on the VR headset. I didn't even know you could do stuff like that on there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a cool trailer for It, Stephen King's It. You're basically looking down at Pennywise while he's in the sewer going, "Hey, come here." It's creepy.
Okay, so if I'm ever constipated, that's a good way to know that I can shit myself.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've had both of you guys on for quite a while. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't get to address yet? I don't want to eat up all of your day.
No, I think we did talk a good bit about how great Zen is, and Out of Ammo has the free game if you get it before Tuesday. And then, you know, it's still worth playing if you get it after Tuesday.
And just make sure you have two Move controllers, because one is not enough, although you can score a basket with just one.
There you go. And you're right, there should be an achievement for that. That sounds like you got kind of robbed there.
I think you guys got to look into that and fix that, add that achievement.
Trophy, sorry, I used the wrong language.
I call everything achievements.
Yeah.
I'm an Xbox guy, they're achievements. Oh, man. Well, Christopher, thank you so much for joining the show and chatting with us. Send our best wishes to Mel and that he gets better soon.
I shall.
Grant, always good having you around as well, buddy.
You too, man. Good to hang out. Nice to meet you, Chris.
Nice to meet you too.
Did you have any other questions, Grant?
I do not. I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good. I'm very excited about all your publishing opportunities here.
Yeah, you'll hear a lot in the next few months.
Yeah, Ben's gonna have a big year, sounds like. So
totally, yeah.
Good stuff.
Cool, and keep us posted, because I would love to join you guys for the ride.
I'm sure we'd I know we'd love to have you. I think I speak for Mel in that regard. I don't know.
Well, you'd want Grant. He's the good one.
This whole sickness thing. Yeah, I don't really like those guys. I'm just seeing Chris over there.
Well, hopefully we didn't get you sick either for future visits. But thanks again to the both of you for joining. Everybody else, stick around. We're going to take a quick musical break, probably some from Grant like I always do. Then we will be back with more show. But until then, Chris, do you have any final words to end this?
Ah, final words, man. That sounds so final.
Final.
This is the point where you could like get all your plugs in, yeah, or maybe, you know, just take one more blow at us.
Zen, you know, just search for him on Twitter, Zen_Studios on Twitter. There's also a Pinball FX account that I recommend you follow, Pinball FX. And me personally, I am CBake76 on Twitter, and that's also my YouTube name if you want to check out some videos about superhero video games. And ZenStudios.com, PinballFX.com. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
Ball squad, shoot for the skill shot, it's a house ball. Ball squad, shoot the green like a mock jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Mel is the Zen. Show with the Milky Boy, Sandwich the U Buffet. Ball squad, with a ball squad.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another quick thanks to Grant and to Chris for joining, but swapping those out. Cole Martin, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Yeah,
it's a thing. It's a day. So it makes you feel better. I'm all jacked up on steroids today.
Nice. So are you just like tripping balls right now?
Oh my God. It doesn't do anything to me mentally, but I can literally just bounce off the walls. And for somebody who struggles to walk on a daily basis, this feeling of I can run a marathon is so strange.
Damn. Send me some of that shit. Holy hell.
I've had 4 doses so far, and I have to take 6 before bed.
Wow.
So I've got 2 more to go. And then tomorrow I'll take 5. It's a taper. Like 6 the first day, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And like it literally just... It makes me want to eat everything in the house, and then I just like boing 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 boing, because that's just, I can't help myself.
See, I would have to be careful to take something like that, because that would probably finally give me the energy and motivation to just kill myself.
Don't take steroids, please. Don't do it.
Why haven't you killed yourself yet, Joe? You're so depressed. Lazy. What are you gonna do? But lots more to do in this show. I hope everyone enjoyed the chat with Chris Baker at Zen. Feel bad Mel couldn't do it, but he's like all of us. We're all under the weather. Mel Kirk under the weather too. So, you know, got a soldier on, and got some news and reviews that we got to do. So let's jump to it. What you think?
News. Let's do it.
All right. First up, 2 new backward compatible titles were added to the Xbox One lineup this week. 2 pretty solid titles. The first, Lego Indiana Jones 2, which, cool. Happy to see another Lego game there. That's one I actually haven't completed yet, so I'm happy I get to re-download that. Might dive back into it. And then the other. Holy shit, am I excited about the other backward compatible game on Xbox this week. Split. Really? Second. Have you played Split Second?
I have not, but that's going to bleed into some other news, because I will be able to rectify that situation.
You will in just a few short days. Split Second had the misfortune of releasing, I believe, within a week of the game Blur. Yeah. You remember that one?
I do remember Blur.
Blur was an Activision game developed by Bizarre Creations, who, you know, like Geometry Wars, and I believe Project Gotham was their series. And Bizarre made another racing game with Blur, which was basically like a grown-up adult neon, not adult as in mature rated, but like for the big kids, hyper neon and over-the-top action Mario Kart style game. It was kart racing in full-size cars, and it was absolutely insane. Split Second was a more traditional racer, but it had, you know, they had different objectives in there and a lot of destruction in there. And one of the massive things that you could do was they would have sections in levels. Like if in a level you're driving down an airport runway, you can have a trigger that you hit if your power gauge is high enough that will cause a plane to crash land into the airfield right on the runway. So the next lap, instead of having an open runway, you're trying to dodge a gigantic fucking plane that's crashing across the track.
Wow.
Or even driving through the plane. There's another level where the road runs up across a dam. I'm sure you know where this is leading.
I can guess.
Lap two, that dam might not be there anymore because someone blew it the fuck up. It is absolutely insane. One of the best racing games that came out last generation. That and Blur were two incredible games that killed each other because they released within a week of each other.
Huh.
Yeah. Fun stuff, huh?
I had no idea that Split Second was a thing. But that sounds like something I would legit enjoy playing. And I'm sad I missed out on it before, but hooray, I get to fix it now.
Yeah, because the good news, not only is Split Second now part of backward compatibility program on Xbox One, in just a few short days, it is joining Games with Gold. So new Games with Gold titles were announced today as well. February 1st through the 16th, you will have 2 weeks to grab Split Second. Yay. And then rest of the month, the 16th through the 28th, is Crazy Taxi. So another solid game. Xbox.
I've heard of that one before, but I haven't played it.
It's good stuff. Can't go wrong with Crazy Taxi. Xbox One through all of February is the game Shadow Warrior, the original one, which, I don't know. maybe it would have been better to do the sequel or something. It feels like they've given away Shadow Warrior free so many times with like, oh, buy Shadow Warrior 2, get the first one free. I'm pretty sure they gave it away on PlayStation Plus. I think they gave it away on Steam. It's like, okay, give us something different.
We get it. Yeah.
And then February 16th through March 15th is Assassin's Creed Chronicles India. So one of the 2D sneaky kill things.
I have mixed feels about that. Because when China went Games with Gold, I said that week, I was like, that first week that China is Games with Gold, India and Russia will be really fucking cheap. And they were. And then I bought them. And I looked at my husband and I said, I'm buying them because since Chronicles went gold, I don't think these two ever will. God damn if I was wrong for a change. Like, how does that happen? I am never wrong. My name is Eternal Always Motherfucking Right Rage, and I was wrong. I'm offended at myself.
That'll teach you. That'll teach you. Some other pretty crazy news from Microsoft this week. Earlier in the week, they announced that from now on, all first-party Microsoft exclusives will be released to Xbox Game Pass. Which, you know, we kind of expected that would happen. But the big news is that they will release onto Game Pass on launch day.
And stay there.
Yes.
Permanently.
As permanent additions. So when March 20th rolls around and little Billy is sitting there with $60 in his hand, like, oh, I really want to get Sea of Thieves. Does he buy Sea of Thieves for $60 plus tax? Or does he grab a month of Game Pass for $10? And get Sea of Thieves and every other game in Game Pass.
I think the obvious choice is by Game Pass because it's a long-term value.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that might be what Microsoft is hoping for in regards to, look, when, let's face it, Microsoft's first-party IPs don't sell well. Quantum Break did shit. Sunset Overdrive didn't do particularly well. I don't think it did anyway. You know, Quantum Break did poorly. Record was panned. Like the odds of it doing well is not high, and that's a shame. It's not a fault
of the game at all because those games range from really good to fucking phenomenal. The problem is And, you know, people could try to deny this all they want. From the moment the Xbox One was launched, there has been this nonstop bias against the console. No matter what they do, they could be like, oh, well, we don't like this on it. Microsoft's like, okay, we'll change it. We'll fix it. There, it's done. Oh, well, why did you change it? Why can't you stick with your convictions?
Yeah. It really has felt like this whole generation, like Xbox can't do anything right. And
it's bullshit.
I'm seeing that again with Game Pass. Like, I'm legit seeing people having fits about getting first party games through Game Pass. But if you look at it from Microsoft's point of view, they're trying to rope in the kind of people who wouldn't have the budget to buy a $60 game every month.
Wait, how are people arguing against first party games being in Game Pass?
People are arguing against it, saying that it's a bad move for Microsoft because they're using the argument where, you know, little Johnny would buy 6 months of Game Pass instead of buying just one game. But what you got to look at is that it's a subscription service, and if you're enjoying it, you're going to stay subscribed to it to keep playing those games you're enjoying. Mm-hmm. You're going to convince your friends, look, okay, my friend Studa is in the chat right now, and he was not totally convinced on State of Decay. I am psyched for State of Decay, and I'm like, motherfucker, you are playing State of Decay 2. I don't care what you say. This announcement means he's going to go pick up Game Pass, and we're going to get to play State of Decay together. And that's all I wanted. And now I'm going to pressure him to keep playing it. So he's going to keep paying for those $10 a month or buy a year long card to stay with it so that he doesn't have to listen to my mouth saying, motherfucker, come play State of Decay with me. It's going to snag in those kind of players that it would have missed otherwise. Like, he's not going to go pay $60 for State of Decay. He's just not. I know it. Yeah. I've been saying it for a year, even though I'm hassling him, play State of Decay. He's not going to. There's just players that don't have that kind of reach to just grab up everything that comes out. And that's fine. So this whole casting the net with Game Pass, it ropes in the players who might have otherwise missed out on this shit. It gives them a chance to try a game, and maybe they'll decide, oh, I do like that after all. And maybe I will just buy it and let Game Pass lapse or whatever.
I think what it does is it helps Microsoft have to avoid when they have games. It's like, oh, well, this game didn't sell up to expectations. And now they don't have to have any kind of sales expectations with games because they're not making games to sell, you know, explicitly for the purpose of selling in retail stores. Clearly, they still will, but it's like Netflix, where they are creating these things to put directly onto their service and to convince people to get that service.
Right. And to add into that, most of these games are multiplayer based, if you think about it. State of Decay 2 is really hyping the multiplayer aspect. First version of the game didn't have multiplayer. And I said then, I love this game. It's one of my favorite games. Hell, I've got a Bronto Gas sign hanging in my living room. But it was missing multiplayer. And it didn't have the fan base kind of traction that it needed to make that investment worth the studio's while.
No.
So now they've got Microsoft's backing for publishing, and now they've got multiplayer. What's the best way to get an instant player base?
Exactly. Give it away in some form or another. Give it away, quote, free, but we know that if it were games with gold, you're paying for gold. If it's Game Pass, you're paying with Game Pass. But still, that's a $60 mm-hmm. game on launch that you were getting just for being a subscriber to whichever thing you're subscribed to.
Yep.
And now
you've suddenly got those numbers, that player base that you needed to make the multiplayer aspect work. Now you've got word of mouth going out. People going, oh, you know, I'm really enjoying, you know, Sea of Thieves or State of Decay. Like, Sea of Thieves wouldn't work if it wasn't for the fact that there were people playing it in large numbers. Mm-hmm. It just won't. It's like, you know, PUBG and Fortnite. They don't work without the numbers. And Sea of Thieves is the same way. So if you're launching that out into a service that's already doing well anyway, Game Pass is doing well. it's a well-received program. It's got a steady subscriber base. Fuck, throw those subscribers into multiplayer games and watch what happens.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm excited about the fact that, you know, I would obviously plan on getting Sea of Thieves. I would plan on getting Crackdown 3. I would plan on getting State of Decay. I would plan on getting Forza Horizon 4 when it comes out this fall, because we know it's coming out this fall. Mm-hmm. They could say, oh, well, we haven't announced it. We know Forza Horizon 4 is coming out this fall. We could get, you know, whatever other games, I could want to get all of those. If I were to get Sea of Thieves, Crackdown, and State of Decay, and Forza, that is $240 right there. Four games in 1 year, $240. Take away the Best Buy discounts, it'd be like $12 a game times for that. So that's like $50 less. So $190. Let's go $190 for four games. Or $10 a month.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to not be a Game Pass subscriber once these games start coming out. Like, I can understand the people who are on the fence about it now, but I think as soon as March 20th rolls around and Sea of Thieves is in Game Pass, I think that'll be the day that I start my subscription and never end it.
Well, see, here's the thing. I hadn't really planned to play Sea of Thieves, and I hadn't really planned on Crackdown. I was banking on just State of Decay being my one big purchase this year, and I was banking that I probably won't get it to review. Unfortunately, I probably wouldn't get it to review. I would probably just have to cough up the cash for it, and then I'd have to figure out a way to make my friends cough up the fucking cash for it. So this changes that, because now I'm going to get to play games that I would have otherwise had to have missed out on, unless something had happened insane and I had gotten review codes.
Yeah.
By the grace of whatever deity you believe in.
Well, we already know we're not getting codes for those.
You know, but if it had been the case, that would have been the only way I would have gotten to touch those games. Now I've been caught in that net. Hey, I have Game Pass already. I'm going to get to play shit that I didn't get to play.
Are you a current subscriber?
I am.
Nice.
Ta-da! I got caught in the net.
Look at you, Miss Moneybags over there, dropping $10 a month.
$10 a month. Oh my god! But in reality, like, I don't need it. I have so many fucking games, I don't get time to play what I've got, and yet I pay the $10 a month for Game Pass. And you know why? Because it has the fucking farming simulator games that my husband fucking loves. And it saves me from listening to, can we buy this farming sim game every month? Then fuck it, here's $10. Stay away from the farm sim.
Go lay down. Go lay down. Play your farms. Go lay down. See, I've been very tempted to grab Game Pass, but there's what, 160 games in there right now, something like that, and I want to say I own at least 140 of them, possibly more. So like Game Pass doesn't,
that is the other problem. Like, there's few of them on there that I'm just like, oh shit, I already have that, and I have that, and I have that.
Yeah, but now, like, I know I could just save my money and get first-party games there. And instead of buying, you know, the Forza 4 Horizon Ultimate Edition for $100 with the Season Pass and the VIP and a Steelbook and all this, I'll just buy the fucking VIP and Season Pass, and it's already in my Game Pass.
Yeah.
So
I think that's the other thing, too. It opens up funding for people. If you're on a tight budget, and you can cough up money for the game, but you may not be able to get DLC or shit, then now that's out the window. You don't have to worry about that. I paid $10 a month, I've got the game. Fuck it, I can go spend $5 or $10 on DLC that I wouldn't have played otherwise.
I think it's smart. I think Sony and Microsoft are either going to steal the idea relatively quickly, or who knows, maybe this will just end up being a flop for Microsoft. No one else wants to really give them the time of day anymore, so hopefully this will turn it around for them.
PS Now service.
Dark Beacon. It's all digital. Fuck that 3 megabit speed. Yeah, that's. I guess that's one of the other issues, is if you're in an area that has garbage internet, this really doesn't help you much.
Yeah. I will say it's better, though, than we've talked before about PS Now, and you said that you have to stream the game. You don't actually download it. So, I mean, it's still a better idea for people who are in areas where they have low connectivity.
Yeah, it'll take them a day and a half to download an arcade title, but they'll have it.
But once it's there, they have it. And they don't have to worry about waiting in a queue or using up data or, you know, running up your bandwidth or whatever, just trying to stream a game.
You can just wait to stream a game.
Yeah. Yeah, even because I've seen, like, oh, you know, you're 47th or 50th in line to play this game. You're just like, the fuck has time for that?
Fuck you, Sony. Fuck you.
If I want to play a game, I'm going to push A and play that fucking game. Stupid. Fortnite was down this week, and you know what I did? I went and played something fucking else because it was telling me I had an hour wait to play Fortnite. I'm not waiting for an hour to do jack shit. It's 2018. I don't have to wait anymore, motherfuckers.
Very true. The other bit of news coming from the whole Game Pass thing is that they announced they will introduce, finally, a six-month subscription option starting March 20th, same day as Sea of Thieves, for $59.99. So it's not any cheaper, but it's not as, you know, annoying as a recurring fee. So now you just pay twice a year. And then people are like, oh, I'll just wait until they bundle a year of Game Pass, a year of Gold, and maybe some other stuff for like $100. Motherfucker, year of Game Pass is 120, and you expect a year of Game Pass, a year of Gold, and more shit for $100? Fuck off.
That's pretty much the appetite. It's like people who were bitching, oh, I bought an Xbox One X, and now they have the deal where if you get an Xbox One X, you get PUBG with it, and they should go back and retroactively give all of us PUBG too. No, that's not the way sales work.
No, I think it's closer to being, hey, we're going to give you $100, and then them being, fucking why? Give me like $200.
Yeah.
What do I want $100 for? Give me $200. Fuck you if you don't.
It's such an odd dynamic, and you see it especially like on the Twitter verses. They're terrible, and you're just sitting there going, I don't understand this mentality at all.
Just the sense of entitlement among these goddamn kids these days.
Fucking millennials, though. Fucking I say that. Kids. I think technically I qualify as a millennial, but still. Fucking millennials.
Fucking millennials. Goddamn kids, get off my lawn. But yeah. I think this is definitely the thing that's gonna convince me to finally grab Game Pass. I never did it before, mainly because the library wasn't there for me, but new games, I can't say no to new games. Those were things I planned on buying Sea of Thieves. I planned on buying Crackdown. I planned on buying State of Decay. The only thing that might convince me to still buy any of those, even if I'm a Game Pass subscriber, is if they've got some baller ass looking collector edition.
Other than that,
$10 a month. Goddamn right.
They do have that Sea of Thieves controller coming out.
Yeah, I'm still mad it doesn't have rubber grips.
Somebody needs to buy me that for a birthday present. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, my birthday's 2 days beforehand, so I come first, obviously.
That's what it means to be the co-host. You get second.
Anyway, some other news. It came out this past week that Yuji Naka, the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog, has joined Square Enix.
Oh, snap.
Interesting. Very interesting. I know he created his own studio after he left Sonic Team and released a handful of games that way, including a really adorable one called Ivy the Kiwi. But to join Square Enix, I can only wonder what that's going to lead to.
So wait, did the studio he created join Square Enix or just him?
Just Yuji Naka of the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay, so just he did, not the studio he made, too.
No one knows what's going on with the studio, but Dark Mika and
Chap.
There's
a lot of nobody knows what the fuck's going on.
Dark Mika and Chap, but the question now, will you be able to play any of these games on the Game Pass or no? What, the ones that are in-game? If it's in Game Pass, you could play it. That's the point of Game Pass. It's like Netflix. If the game is available to play in the Game Pass library, you could play it.
It's yours for free.
You just download it and play it.
Download it and play.
And then if the game ever gets removed, they give you like a couple of weeks or a month heads up of like, hey, the game's going to go away at the end of the month. So you finish it the fuck up and get ready for more stuff.
They even go as far as to like send the message like to you as a message. They'll say message from Xbox Live. And I'll say, okay, this is what's leaving Game Pass, and this is when, and this is what we're replacing it with. And, you know, here's other games like it that you may like or whatever. And then with a button to launch Game Pass and bring it up and find what you want.
Yeah, good stuff. But last bit of news that I have is that EA and BioWare have confirmed that Anthem is getting delayed to 2019. I am not at all shocked. I didn't. You got to whisper a little louder.
No, I don't got to. I don't got to whisper louder at all. But I'm not surprised. I'm not. Everybody was already saying it's going to get delayed. Well, no shit. That's the way the cookie crumbles at this point.
Pretty much. But not only that, but BioWare is also hard at work on a new Dragon's Age title as well.
Dragon Age 4.
So, Dragon Age and Anthem being worked on at BioWare. Hopefully they turn out better than Mass Effect.
I was about to say, let's hope that whoever was responsible for animation on Mass Effect Andromeda is not there anymore, just for the sake. You know what? I wasn't even bothered by the videos of the animation. As awkward as it was, I've seen worse. And I think that's probably because we're from an era when animation used to look way worse. And so I tend to be a little forgiving over stiff facial animation. But I just don't want that person to be there and be working on these games because I don't want to listen to the Twitter backlash for 4 days.
Yeah.
I don't care if the animation is actually bad. I just don't want it to be bad because I don't want to listen to people complain.
Well, that's going to happen anyway.
It is. If it's not the facial animation, it will literally be something else. There will be a loot box that throws the meta out of whack or something. The end game won't be long enough. The campaign won't be long enough. There will be a random tissue on a desk somewhere that's not supposed to be there because it's not headcanon. I don't understand how this shit works. And somebody's always mad at something.
I forgot. There was one more bit of news that I had this week. God of War on the PS4 finally got a release date, April 20th. So it is coming out significantly sooner than I expected. Props to Sony on that one. I thought it would be a fall title at the earliest.
Now it's going to get delayed. He done jinxed it now. That's all there is to it.
they got themselves a collector's edition up on the storefronts that you can buy.
Oh my.
It looks pretty nifty.
It got one of them shiny paperweights?
It comes with a 9-inch Kratos and Atreus, whatever the kid's name. It's Kratos and the kid. A 9-inch statue, which looks pretty cool. Kratos it looks like he is hacking the neck off of a zombie while the kid has an arrow stuck through someone else's head. So they're murdering motherfuckers.
God of War is a zombie game?
I don't know. It looks like a zombie. Might be. A zombie. White Walkers.
I've never played, so I don't know. It's a PlayStation. Like, I feel like if I touched the PlayStation, my hand would just catch fire at this point. He would just be like, what are you doing?
It also comes with a cloth map, a lithograph, two inch wood carving figures, which look pretty neat. And obviously the steel bookcase, which, you know, is what catches my eye all the time. And then some digital stuff of like an armor set, a shield, a digital comic, digital art book. Dynamic theme.
How much is all that fancy going to set you back?
All of that, they're fancy. Surprisingly, only $129, which isn't too bad.
To be fair, I think the Division, the collector's edition was like 120 or something, but it came with an agent watch that actually worked.
Wasn't that one like 170?
Maybe, I don't know.
Because I remember
that it was under 200, but it also came with the gold edition of the game and some extra bonus digi stuff. And
yeah, I remember seeing the price on that one and just being like, "Eh, it's too much," and then I didn't get it.
The way I actually got the Division was somebody had bought the collector's edition because they wanted the watch, and they gave away the game and the code for the season pass because they already had it. And I won it, and I had to post on YouTube in the comment section, "Give me the D." And I won. And then I spent 2,700 hours playing the game.
Good God. Good. What is it with you always wanting the D from things? How do we keep coming back to that?
I mean, it's a thing, and it happens, and I just hit my phone with my pen.
Oh, Lord.
I can't. It's like it's a biological urge or something. I can't help it.
Oh, jeepers. Anyway, we do have more to do. We have a game to give away on the show.
We're giving away a game?
Yeah, I'm excited. We are giving away Lost Grimoires 2 from Artifacts Mundi. And we had 6 people enter. Finally, we have a fucking turnout for a contest. What?
Artifacts Mundi games are my favorite.
I can never tell, like, if you're trying to tell me something or if you're just excitedly mumbling to yourself.
I'm just excited.
Inner monologue. Use the inner monologue. It throws me off.
My inner monologue shit the bed when I started doping up on those steroids this morning.
All right. Well, we got 6 entries. We only got 3 codes, so let's disappoint some people, and not my wife for once. The first email is from Aroto Demato, who says, "Every persona you play, every move you make, every social link you break, every random fight you take, I'll be watching you. Hey, guys and gals. First of all, happy birthday for the 37 years of SML. I never doubted you'd go that far. Let's celebrate with a good hug and a cold shower together. Another Artifacts game. They're masters of this craft, and Lost Grimoires 2 is fantastic. What? How could it be? Have I already played it? Yes. Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I'm entering for my brother, since I'm broke as fuck, and I really want him to try it out. He lives in another town, and I don't game share with him because I'm too spooked to do it. Props to you, Aroto. Hear all kinds of ban-related stories that make me shiver to the bones and beyond. My brother ain't exactly a genius. He already got me in credit card trouble in the past. I love the guy, though. He just got himself an X-Bo box. As he calls it, ex-Botox. So winning this would be as sweet as a barnacle. From your lover and dear friend, kiss, hugs, kiss, hugs."
If you guys do a credit card fraud, do you really want to give him a game? I think we need to reevaluate the relationship with your brother here.
Next email is from Dark Mika, who enters and says, "I'd like to win it for a couple reasons. One, you introduced me to Artifacts Mundi games. It's your fault I'm addicted to them. You're the reason my pocketbook has been empty for so long. Yeah, that's right. Your fault. Two, I'm addicted to the games, and this is one of the 4 that I don't actively have on Xbox. 3, I need more Artifacts games. I have nearly all of them on Steam too. Again, because I'm addicted to them, and that's your fault. 4, you can't just give me this drug and then not give me more when I need my fix. It's not right, man. It's just not right, man. I need my fix. Pretty please. In case you're interested, the other 3 Artifacts Mundi games I need on the Xbox One are Lost Grimoire, Stolen Kingdom, Grim Legends 2, and Clockwork Tales of Glass and Ink. I bought all the rest of them since you introduced me to them in the first place. You might be low-key evil. And honestly, Artifacts Mundi should be paying you a finder's fee for getting me this addicted to their games." Oh, Lord. So let's see. Crack addiction.
I don't know. Mika, I can't let you have a sequel if you haven't played the first, though. It's a rule.
Although I am going to take this second, since she's in the chat, to copy and paste this one section of her entry to see if we could figure out where did she go wrong. Can anybody guess? Anybody? Do we have any people to guess? Cole, do you see the mistake there?
I see the glaring mistake. I thought you were going to post and it was going to have LOL in it, but there is not an LOL. There is a U-O, your Y-O-U-R instead of an apostrophe.
I am proud of you. Someone has watched Grammar Slam. So points have been deducted in that occasion.
I know how to English.
I know English. Next email from Leon Claymore, who says, I love their games and I recently quit smoking. 2 months and going strong. A little help keeping my mind out of cigars, please. So he quit smoking. Congrats. Whether you win or not a copy of the game, congrats on quitting smoking and making yourself better. So congratulations on dropping that. Next up is Latino Heat, who says, good evening to the SML podcast. Once again, opportunity knocks to play another wonderful game made by the Artifacts Mundi. Me being a huge fan of point and click and enjoying the mind-boggling puzzles this game has to offer brings great interest into playing this current game. This time, the plot is interesting with the player portraying the royal protectress asked to track down the royal prince and some mysterious woman using with knowledge of alchemical arcana and puzzle solving knowledge to save the prince is a task I must conquer if given the opportunity. Thanks so much once again to the SML podcast for the chance. So how do you sum that one up?
Latino not already have that. I feel like Latino is slipping if he doesn't have Oscar Marsh too.
I swear every time I look in the ID Discord, it's like congrats to Latino Heat on winning a game.
Yeah. I don't even go to it because it's like, okay, well, bye.
I haven't looked at the chat. Did anyone? Oh, yeah, Dark Mika did mention. Yeah, you commented on it. So, gotta learn that shit. If nothing else, one of my biggest gripes in life is people who fuck up grammar. Like, it drives me. I think it might bother me more than people saying LOL, because everyone says LOL and I've just gotten used to it at this point. But when people have improper forms of words with grammar, like I link them to the CM Punk Grammar Slam videos on YouTube. If you haven't seen them, go see them and edumacate yourself. Next email is from John Harvey, who says, I'd like a copy of Lost Grimoires 2, please, Joe. The major reason is because, well, it's an Artifacts Mundi game. These are usually a fair bet to be good because you know what to expect. A point-and-click hidden object game with a fairy tale-like story. I like to play them when I'm not in the mood for something complicated. They're the perfect antidote for something like Dark Souls. Soul. I'm in a lot of trouble. I have a lot of souls. Dark Souls, Super Meat Boy, and anything that requires your attention and focus because you could take your time and relax. Puzzles are good enough to make you think without getting too frustrating, and the story is usually entertaining enough to drive you along until the conclusion. This particular game seems to focus on an alchemist and making spells from the titular grimoire. I even have the first Lost Grimoires on my to-do list waiting to be started. Would be great to play through them one after another, so thanks for the chance. I know you said to be creative, but I couldn't think of anything, so here's a cool thought-provoking quote from Full Metal Alchemist instead. Water, 35 liters. Carbon, 20 kilograms. Ammonia, 4 liters. Lime, 1.5 kilograms. Phosphorus, 800 grams. Salt, 250 grams. Saltpeter, 100 grams. Sulfur, 80 grams. Fluorine, 7.5 grams. Iron, 5.6 grams. Silicon, 3 grams. And 15 other elements in small quantities. That's the total chemical makeup of the average adult body. Modern science knows all this, but there's never been a single example of a successful human transmutation. Like there's some missing ingredient. For that matter, the elements found in human being, it's all junk that you can buy in any supermarket with a child's allowance. Humans are pretty cheaply made. Good luck, everyone.
How many codes have we given away?
Three. Yep. And one final email is from Jacob Garner, who says, "Hi, I absolutely want Lost Grimoires 2 for the Xbox One because I need more games for my new system. But my wife loves these hidden object games, loves them to pieces, and it's a game that she would actually be able to play since she hates first-person shooters, has problems moving the camera in third-person games, which is just about everything I own. So please, let me be the winner of the contest because it'll make my wife happy." And at least something will make your wife happy for once, Jacob. All right, so 6 entries, 3 codes. We got some decisions to make. Do you have any that absolutely stand out?
I'm very pro to encouraging wives to play. I think that more women need to quit bitching about how much their husbands play games and pick up a controller and play it with them. So Jacob's got one from me.
Okay, so Jacob is a winner. And then we still have Aroto with X Botox, Dark Mika's crack addiction, Leon who quit smoking, Latino Heat who must conquer the task, and John who thinks humans are cheap.
Bonus points for quitting smoking there for Leon. So that one gets a win from me too.
I could agree with that one. And then I guess it comes down to the final 4. We only got 1 code left. I'm kind of leaning towards a Roto with the X Botox. Yeah. To help a brother out. I like when people enter to help someone else out.
That is a good point. I am pro with that. I can get down.
Cool beans. So Aroto, Leon, and Jacob, you are our 3 winners. You will each be getting a code for Lost Grimoires. I can't talk tonight. Between that and Dark Souls.
Did you take some of my steroids?
I wish.
Stay out of my drugs, Joe.
I wish.
That wistful sigh.
Anyway, we got some reviews to tackle. First game to talk about tonight is called Star Drone VR, developed and published by Beat Shapers. Released January 24th on PlayStation VR for $7.99. Star Drone is a high kinetic action puzzle with a mix of arcade, pinball, breakout physics, and collect the objects. Cause your attackers to crash with rapid speed while collecting gems and power-up enhancements. Explore the levels to find key power-ups and earn more bonus points that will ultimately let you compete against the world on the Star Drone scoreboards, now in virtual reality. Star Drone originated as a Vita game quite a while ago. The main gameplay is you basically launch a ship in a direction in space. And because it's space, you just continue moving in one direction until you hit something. Or you can also use, there's little pods or beacons around the levels that when you're close enough, you can kind of attach a grappling beam to it and kind of like hook around and swing around it. If you've ever played the old NES game Clue Clue Land, it's somewhat similar to that, in theory, obviously not the whole game. But the goal is to fly around these levels, bouncing off things, grabbing on and whipping in different directions to collect all of the stars in a level, or some items might have star fragments that you have to pick up and take to an ending area. It seems to vary depending on the stage you are, what the goal is. And I haven't really found a way to tell which is which until I just go in the stage and do it. Like the one level I collected all of the bits, took it to the end, and it wasn't the end of the level, and I figured out that I missed a star that I had to run over, like, the other side of the level. Another one, I tried to get all the stars taken care of, but that didn't matter because I needed to kill all the enemies instead. It just seemed to, like, vary from mission to mission what you had to do, and I couldn't really tell how to do what the absolute goal was. Until I kind of just figured it out in the level. The game is fun as hell, very easy to play. The VR doesn't seem to add a crazy amount to it. I could see, like, I understand the appeal of having everything in like 3D, but it's not like you're in the levels living this. It's very much an overhead view. It definitely helps, like, if your ship is going off to the one side, but the camera hasn't caught up, you could just kind of turn your head and look, be like, oh, it's down there. I see what's going on down there. But it's not a game that suffers or benefits in any massive, massive way from VR, but it's really cool to have it there. It's always fun having a game or an experience that you've known and that you're used to in a new, I guess, a new dimension and a new sense of reality. Tons of stages in the game, tons of stuff to do, a lot of tricky, tricky stages in the game. After every level, you get graded either bronze, silver, or gold based on what you've done. I cannot figure out how the grading works in the game. I can't tell. Like, when the stage is over, it's not like, you scored this much, this is what you need to get to the next one. It's just like, you're back at the menu. You didn't get any rating at all.
Fuck off.
That's it.
I don't understand why games will have rating systems like that and then not like lay out the parameters for it so that you know what you need to do to improve.
Like, I don't know. Do I need to go quicker? Do I need to get a higher score? Does it need to be a combination of both?
Right.
What the fuck do I have to do to at least get a bronze on this stage? There's a stage
Should I stop spawning in and spinning in circles because that's the only thing I know to do at this point? Or should I?
Well, it's like maybe the third stage in the game, I couldn't even get a bronze, and I don't know what I have to do to get either a faster time or a better score. I don't know. I can't figure it out. And then, you know, a dozen stages later in a harder stage, I got a fucking gold, and I'm like, what did I do? How did I earn that? I wish the game was a bit more clear on the goals, target scores. It'd be nice if there was some form of HUD so you kind of had a clue of what was going on. I understand it's all about the immersion, but information is helpful as well.
Right.
I don't know. It's a lot of fun, though. You can't deny how damn fun it is. I tried playing both with a Move controller and with just an actual controller. The way you use those beacons that you attach yourself to swing around comes down to whatever control method you're using. If you're using a DualShock controller, you need to use the helmet and look at the beacon that you want to activate and then hit the button on the controller. So it requires not just the precision of looking, but also the fact that you need to really put your peripheral vision to use so that you can, you know, look where the target is, but still kind of keep an eye on what's going on in the background. Otherwise, if you use a PlayStation Move controller, you could just point that at whatever you want and activate that one. I think it is miles easier playing with the Move controller. It's not unplayable with the DualShock. It just requires a bit more concentration. Either way, for $8, I think this is an easy one to pick up. The game is a lot of fun. It might not bring anything massively new with being in VR, but if you've never played Star Drone before, this is probably the definitive way to do it. And it's really cheap for a VR game. It's only $8, and there's a shitload of content. Yeah. So I'd say pick this one up.
Nice.
Next game to talk about is called The Aquatic Adventure of the Last Human, developed by YCJY, published by Digirati Distribution, released January 19th on Xbox One, January 23rd PS4 for $14.99. Explore the ruins of the human race and discover the thriving wildlife that blossomed after our extinction in this underwater action adventure. Encounter monstrous creatures and let curiosity guide you on an inevitable voyage of extinction. Cole, tell me about this one.
For a game that's called The Aquatic Adventures of the Last Human, you spend the entire cinematic at the beginning in space. We start with the literal, in the beginning, he's not the last human. I say he. There's no gender for this person. The protagonist is, you know, whisked away into space and gets trapped in like a wormhole looking type thing. The years tick by. and eventually we end up from 2016 into the year unknown, and thousands of years have gone by. The rocket ship gets thrown back into the solar system and lands back on Earth, and our protagonist discovers that while they were away, climate change has happened, and the Earth is not what it was when they left. The polar ice caps have melted and inverted, and now the Earth is completely flooded over, and humans are gone. So our human who was in space is now the literal last human. A little rocket ship crashes into the ocean, and the human is able to get out of the ship on a little submarine and explore what remains of the civilization that they missed out on by being in space, as well as witness the changes that the Earth and the wildlife and the flora and fauna and all that have had to change in how they've adjusted. But it's not just an exploration type game. It is actually a boss rush with a Metroidvania flair to it.
Really?
So as your little ship, you explore the ocean and everything that has changed, but eventually you will pick up weapons, and you will pick up hull upgrades so you have more health, or you'll pick up a lamp, or like a harpoon, a torpedo, even drones that can be attached to your ship to, or your submarine, to make it a little stronger. And then once you've upgraded some and you continue to explore, you will encounter giant bosses. The first one, for example, being a worm. And the worm, like, regurgitates little tiny worms at you, and you have to shoot it with the harpoon. For all intents and purposes, it's pretty well done, but there are a few complaints, though. The harpoon, for example, is mounted on the bottom of your ship, of your submarine, and it only has a 180-degree turn radius. Yeah. So if you get attacked from above, you're fucked. That's that. Start over. Thankfully, it will just start you right back outside of the boss rush to where you were at, so you don't have to, like, travel far away again or whatever. But it's a lot of do it over, do it over, do it over.
A lot of trial and error in the boss fights.
Yeah, and especially the torpedo being the worst, or not the torpedo, but the harpoon that you get in the very beginning just is literally the worst thing ever, because it is limited to that 180-degree radius. It also has a very short fire distance unless you hold the trigger. The longer you hold the trigger, the more it charges up and shoots further, but it's still a really short distance. And this is probably why humans went extinct, is because they were trying to pilot around with these horrible ass harpoons on the bottom of their boats, not able to do jack shit. But one of the great things, when you do finally beat that worm, that's how you get out of the area you're in. You have to fly into the worm's mouth and all the way through its body and out its ass.
Oh, adorable.
The game makes you go for a giant sea worm's ass.
Nice.
Okay. Now, once you do all that, you get to explore the rest of the game and continue, you know, getting your upgrades and what have you. It's an incredibly beautiful world. There's a lot of detail has gone into the pixel art here, especially with the backgrounds and the creation of the monsters. It's really creative, but it's not perfect. The color schemes, they can be a little muddied at times. Like, it's hard to appreciate how much attention has gone into, like, the detail of putting coral growing through a broken down factory that's underwater and, you know, being swarmed by giant fish when everything is, like, green and orange. You're just like,
I mean, it is under the ocean.
The other problem with that, though, is that your ship is gray and there's no outline or anything around it. It's incredibly easy to lose where you're at especially during a boss battle. Some of these bosses will kind of chase you into areas that are just really dark, and you're fucked. You can't see. You don't know if they're near you. You don't know where you're at. You don't know where you're going. You know, it's just like, all I can see is the crosshairs for that horrible-ass harpoon. Now what? And you will die, and it feels cheap. You know, it would be nice if there was at least some kind of, like, outline or glow or haze or something so you can see where the fuck that boat's at.
Yeah.
Especially when you are in the areas where it's, like, a gray outline, you know, a grayish toned background with lots of navy and gray and dark, you know, blacks, and then you just throw a gray submarine on top of it.
Well, aside from color palette, it sounds like an overall pretty solid game. Or
it plays well. I don't have any complaints other than, like, hey, I lost my ship and the map is useless.
So, $15. What's your thoughts on it?
I give it a solid try it. I would like to see a few little things changed. Like I said, the map is useless. There's no pinpoint to, it's all very, very minimal and pixelated. And it's just like, it only outlines the basic shape of the scene you're in. So if you leave there and you come back and you're like, oh, I thought I saw an upgrade maybe over here and I'd like to explore it again or whatever, you can't do that.
Good stuff.
It's not going to mark it on the map. You're just going to have to go digging back and be like, I don't know where anything was. So with a few little tweaks, it would definitely be better, but it's a solid try it.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Le Grand Legacy, developed by Semisoft, published by another indie and Mayflower Entertainment. This one released January 24th on Steam for $24.99. Welcome to Le Grand, a beautifully hand-drawn world riddled with curious creatures, devastating wars, and intriguing tales of vengeance and redemption. Embark on an epic journey through this sprawling fantasy universe, fight alongside the Fate Bounds as they attempt to bring peace to Le Grand, but be careful who you trust, because everyone has a secret to hide. Ooh. Dark Meek covered this one, wrote in a review, and I am going to read that now. Ahem. Le Grand Legacy is a JRPG created by Semisoft. It uses turn-based combat filled with QTEs and should last you about 30 to 50 hours. You play as You play as a slave who forgot his memories named Finn. You get freed and then set about on a grand journey to help save the world and, you know, hopefully find out more about your past. The story overall is really good, and how the devs utilize the characters' backstories to interact with each other is great. The problem is, the characters start off one-dimensional, and albeit they grow, they stay within their character archetype. One character is bitchy, she develops feelings for another character. Occasionally, she starts to be nice only to realize it and goes right back to being bitchy. Because of this, there doesn't feel like there's any real character growth. The game has PS2-era graphics. All right, I'm looking up the game now. Le Grand Legacy. If this looks anything better than PS2 graphics, I'm drop-kicking you. Now this could easily be done on PS3. These aren't that bad. Some of the textures aren't amazing, but to say this is PS2 graphics, nah, PS2 can't handle that shit. It's like people who are like, oh man, did you see this new game? It looks like a PS1 game. Like, motherfucker, no it doesn't. The game has early PS3 era graphics. I like how it looks, and all the environments are different from their structures to how enemies look. Each area only has a few different types of monster, but there's a large variety due to just how many areas there are. The only drawback to the art style is that it makes it hard to sneak up on enemies for a bonus in battle, because it's difficult to tell where you are in relation to them. The colors of most places are rather muted and dull, which fits the story, as there's something wrong with the planet's life energy, but because of that, those sections aren't very pretty to look at. Its few cutscenes show how good the devs are, as they've created these gritty 3D anime-style cutscenes that are absolutely amazing to watch. The game's map is fairly large, however, thanks to Finn's amnesia, he still doesn't know where anything is. As such, you end up following your allies, unlocking new places along the journey that you can later access as you wish. This is both good and bad. It's good because you aren't going to get overwhelmed trying to find things on the map, but it's bad because you can't really go and explore to your heart's content. Personally, I prefer being able to explore, so this annoyed me. However, for story reasons, I can understand being forced into this. In the game, you control a party of up to 3 characters at a time out of a 6-character pool, which you steadily collect through the journey. The QTE system that's in place for combat is a bit more complicated than just pushing a button when it shows up on the screen. Instead, there's a circle with a striped strike zone in it. A line starts at the top of the circle and goes all the way around one time, and you have to push the button prompt when it's in that strike zone. In the orange, it's good. In the yellow, it's perfect. This system is used for attacks, spells, special attacks, and defense. So if you hate QTEs, you're going to hate this game. There are options in the menu to allow the game to randomize the QTEs or set to one specific button prompt, and allow the game to randomize the location of the strike zone. Putting both on random will net you extra XP. That actually reminds me a lot of a game called Shadow Hearts on the PS2, which was an actual PS2 game. Very, very similar to like the circle strike area with the line that goes around it and you have to time your hits. So I'm kind of interested in seeing this game in action now. As you level up, you never end up feeling like a god. Things will get easier, but that's it. The reason for that is because every character is weak to an element and damage type. There are various types of minigames in the game that are part of the main story, so the gameplay changes up completely every now and then, making the game a bit more fun. Currently, there's an issue with the QTEs. The longer you play, the less responsive the game is at registering your button presses when it comes to the QTEs. This usually starts after 4+ hours of nonstop gameplay. It starts off perfect. Once you release the button, it immediately stops, but eventually it starts to register it a little after you've pressed the button. Eventually, it rarely registers the button presses at all. Exiting the game and restarting it fixes the issue. Sounds like maybe a memory leak or something.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just like a built-in feature to tell you you need to take a break and go like eat a sandwich and
go get some fresh air. Jesus Christ. For $25, I'd say it's worth it. It's a fun game. If you don't like QTEs, then I'm not sure I can sell this to you, no matter how good the game is. This is especially true if you play for long periods of time due to the battle glitch. Everyone else, I suggest you at least try it. It's a great game story-wise, and I personally don't mind the combat. That's something I would love to see come to console. It looked really cool. Mm-hmm. I don't think it at all looks like a PS2 game visually. I think Dark Mika is exaggerating, like a horrible exaggerator who is exaggerating.
Mika would never exaggerate.
No. I like in chat, I'm AFKing. I hate hearing my reviews, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, because I'm making fun of you for your exaggerations. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Noir Chronicles City of Crime, also reviewed by Dark Mika. Developed
but you're
by.
Not reading this one.
Oh, no, you're reading this one. Developed by Brave Giant Limited, published by Artifacts Mundi, released January 25th on Steam for $14.99. Step into the shoes of Alfred Fox, a private eye with a knack for getting into trouble, and confront the danger looming over your old flame, Jesus, Barbara Leper. Use your own intuition and wide investigation techniques. You will follow the intrigue and face many, sometimes deadly, consequences. Cole, what does Dark Mika have to say about Noir Chronicles?
Dark Mika says, Artifacts Mundi has brought out another game for the PC, Noir Chronicles City of Crime. The game is, and you won't be shocked about this if you know Artifacts Mundi games, a hidden object game with a few other types of puzzles sprinkled in for good measure.
What?
In this one, you play as a private investigator trying to solve the murder of your old flame, Barbara, after she calls you late one night in a panic, fearing for her life. The art and music is really good, but I don't think I'll ever get over the faces when characters talk. The plaster faces that move onto 2D bodies that don't. Visually, it just feels disturbing because there's two very distinct different types of animation going on for the models when they're talking. But it's not like that's uncommon in most of their games, as a good deal of them use this technique. The first playthrough of the main game should take between 4 to 8 hours, depending on which difficulty you play the game on, which doesn't matter for achievements if that matters to you. Each subsequent one should take around 1 to 2 hours max, since you know where things are for the most part. Now, I stated main game for a reason. After beating the game once, you'll unlock an extra story, which tells about how your character became a private investigator. This extra story stuff had been showing up more and more in their recent games, and I have to say I enjoy them. They're significantly smaller. This one provides no achievements again, if that matters, and can be completed in an hour, maybe an hour and a half max, depending on difficulty chosen. The extra stories always add just a little bit more to the history of the character and the world around them, while generally being significantly easier than the main game, just as a little bonus to the player. I can get behind that. It's nice. As usual, I heavily suggest it. The games used to be $10, but lately some of them have been showing up for $15. So I'm not entirely sure which this game will cost, but 15. It will most definitely be one of them. For either, I'd suggest it. The games aren't exactly long, but they're fun and not too hard, since it has hint and skip systems built in to make it easier for you. So everyone should get this, and if it's a bit too steep in price, then at least get it on sale. The only two groups I suggest stay away are the usual two, people who hate hidden object games and refuse to touch them, and those with really bad eyesight, since they'll have a really hard time with the game.
That sounds good. Yeah, it seems like $15 is going to be their go-to price on PC for now on.
I wonder how many that puts Artifacts Monday up to on PC. They were at 47, but that was a while ago.
512.
I hope they bring all 512 to Xbox.
Well, they've been steadily coming to consoles, so I'm sure this one will make it over eventually. I believe this is the very first Artifacts game that we're covering that was developed by Brave Giant. I haven't seen their name before.
Yeah, that's a different one.
I know.
But it's a plus that it has the bonus chapter, because a lot of the Artifacts Monday games, when they're developed by another studio and published by Artifacts Monday, don't have the bonus chapters.
Yeah.
So that's neat to see they stuck with that part of the formula.
Indeed. Well, that is all with you right now. I have one more review to take care of, but always good having you on and chatting.
Thanks for putting up with me.
All right, final game to talk about is called Chromagun, developed and published by Pixelmaniacs, released January 22nd on the Switch for $19.99. Welcome to Chromatech's Test Lab. You're here to test our state-of-the-art military-grade color technology, the Chromagun, patent pending. Use it to solve our meticulously designed test chambers by painting the walls and droids. Remember how to mix colors from preschool? Congratulations, you qualify. Covering this one, via phone call... Norg, how are you doing?
Phoning it in, baby!
You really are just phoning this one in, aren't you?
Like, literally.
So how you doing?
Fabulous. How are you down there?
I'm dealing with hiccups, but they haven't popped up in a minute, so I'm hoping maybe they're gone.
You should hold your breath longer.
Okay, well, you tell me about Chromagun. I'm going to hold my breath right...
Alrighty, Chromagun. Well, let's address the elephant in the room straight out of the gate. If you've played Portal, it looks and feels like Portal. There, I said it. That's about where it stops, though, because as the description said, you get to do a lot of color mixing. It starts out very simple. You need to get a drone ball over a spot so that it will hold open a door for you. And in order to do that, you have to paint the wall a color, and the drone has to match the color. As soon as the drone is that color, it will be attracted magically to that wall. And then once that takes effect, it will open the door for you, and then you will go on to either the next level or the next room of the existing level. And it goes on somewhat ad nauseum and somewhat infuriatingly at times, but that's basically the gist of the game. The puzzles, of course, as you would expect, get progressively more difficult, progressively more insidious. Oh, did you make it?
That's as long as I could go.
I'm winded just listening to that. Oh my goodness.
God, I'm too fat.
All right, so shit. Are you feeling okay? Come on, let's get another hiccup out of it. Come on. Oh,
nothing. God damn it.
Okay. Well, as it continues on, it starts adding more pieces to the puzzle where the drones will start following you. The drones that follow you will have spikes on them, and if you get hit too many times, you will die. And then after you die, you have to start the level over again.
Yay.
The puzzles get more and more intricate. There are zappy floors that will kill you instantly if you make the mistake of stepping on them, and you have to lure the drones into them in order to access other areas of the level that you are in. Sometimes it's not as straightforward as paint the wall, attract the droid to stand over the platform so that it'll open a door. Sometimes it takes several platforms to open a door. Sometimes you can't paint the wall next to the platform, and you have to find another more creative way to get the drone where you want it to go and to stay there. That is also one of the challenges. I'm probably about halfway through all of the available levels, and I've only had maybe 3 or 4 times where I've gotten stuck in a puzzle and it's just infuriating, but then you actually solve it and it's really satisfying. So yeah, this was actually a lot of fun. The game itself has, inside the game world, has this feel of you are in the middle of this test bed, and at random times you'll see around the corner a wall that wasn't finished being built, canisters of paint for the gun just laying around in a corner, drones that weren't finished being programmed or activated but left against a wall somewhere. It definitely has a feel of deliberately being rushing you into the test environment that you have been brought into. Now, I wouldn't call that any kind of they were lazy or anything. I think it was deliberately put there to make it look like they're still working on this test environment. And that was it. I was hoping the secretary or the receptionist at the front desk would actually say something to you, but she just looks at you blankly. That was disappointing.
Hey, what you want, sucker?
Can I help you, sir? Please take the door on the left, sir. Have a nice day, sir.
You're too good with voices, George. So it sounds like it's pretty much the
you
same
forgot
game.
Your dildo, sir.
Ooh. Sounds like the same game we've seen on other platforms. How well does it play on the Switch?
It plays really well. And I'll say that by saying that I never at any point saw frame rate drops or glitches. I wish I could say the same thing about Skyrim, honestly, because Skyrim glitches out in a number of different areas and the frame rate drops to like 2 frames a second
in
just a couple of spaces. That is Skyrim.
That is a Bethesda game. That's not a feature. That's not a problem with Bethesda games. That's a feature.
It's a feature. And then, yeah, no frame rate drops. The controls were smooth. Probably a little bit too glitchy at times, because if you're far away from a wall that you need to shoot from far away, you have to really finely manipulate the Joy-Con controls in order to make sure that you're getting the wall. You can zoom, but if you're still really far away, it lends some problems. But I think the puzzles are really well designed, and I'm actually looking forward to getting through the rest of it to find out what other insidious things they throw at me to make me want to throw the Switch through the windshield.
Sounds good. So for the $20 asking price on the Switch, what do you think?
You know, normally I'm a cheapskate, and I would say $20 is almost an instant try, but I'm going to come out and say people need to buy this game. It's good.
Nice. Yeah, I know you like you're a more penny pinching gamer out there.
Tight ass.
Yeah, that too. So glad to hear that it tickles your butthole just enough to convince you to urge people to buy it.
Release a few more pennies. You have to disengage the sphincter if you want to be able to purchase more games.
Oh, man. Well, George, it is always good having you on, chatting about games, even when you have to do it in your car via telephone. I'm guessing that's where you are?
That's exactly where I am. Every once in a while, life catches up with me.
I am good at this. I am very good at this. And I guess I'll talk to you later on, man. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Sphincter! We'll be right back.
Fuck off.